Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to today's conference titled Mid-Year Stock Market Outlook 2020, presented by Chuck Carlson, Chief Executive Officer and Portfolio Manager for Horizon Investment Services. At the end of the presentation, we will have a Q&A session. If you have a question, send an email with question in the subject line to ask@horizoninvestment.com. You may send this email at any time during the program. Again, that's ask@horizoninvestment.com. With that, let's get started. Welcome, Chuck.
Thank you, Phil, and thank you, everyone, for attending the latest in our series of audio conferences sponsored by Horizon Investment Services. My name is Chuck Carlson. I am the Chief Executive Officer of Horizon Investment Services, as well as one of the portfolio managers here at Horizon. Boy, it looks like we picked a pretty good time to offer an audio conference given where we are now and where the market has been. And I plan to cover a lot of ground today, and let me give you a little bit of an outline of that ground. First, we'll kind of take a look back at the first half of the year. I think it's important in order to go forward to take a look at where we have been, why we got here, and what that means for the second half of 2020. We'll also take a look at the economy and what the prospects are for that in the second half of the year, along with the stock market. We'll look at some tools that we use that have done a very good job thus far of keeping us on the right side of this market trend and what they're saying right now, along with some other indicators that we like. Finally, we'll get into the part that everybody always wants to get into, and that's the individual stocks for the second half of the year. What stocks do we think look most attractive for the second half of 2020, and what sectors look good as well? We'll talk a little bit about this whole growth versus value paradigm that gets a lot of attention in the market. We'll also talk about some exchange-traded fund ideas that we have for investors who like to invest in ETFs. And then finally, we'll talk a little bit about a strategy that Horizon has that brings a lot of the ideas and concepts and investments that we'll talk about today together into a single managed portfolio called our Forecast Total Stock Market Strategy. But before I get to all that, let's kind of take a fresh look back at what has transpired in the first half of this year. You know, it's interesting. We're about 6 months into 2020, and I know for a lot of you, including myself, in some respects it feels like 6 years instead of 6 months, given all the machinations and all the changes and everything that is developed during the first half of the year. You know, we started out coming off a very strong 2019, and that strength carried over into the first 2 months, or month and a half, I should say, of 2020, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average rising to an all-time high of 29,551 on February 12th. And then the bottom fell out, basically. What had happened was we started to see the ramifications of the COVID-19 pandemic. We started to see cities and counties and states and indeed countries across the world starting to basically shut down their economies and shut down virtually everything going on. And obviously the market impact was severe. How severe? And I've been in this business now for almost 40 years. And I have never seen anything quite like the swiftness and severity of the moves that we saw in the first half of this year, particularly from February to the end of March. The thing that just drives home just how severe the decline was, from February 12th to the end of March, basically February 12th to March 23rd, when the market bottomed out, when the Dow bottomed out, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell almost 11,000 points in 27 trading days. Let me repeat that because it's significant, and it's also significant for putting some color on what the market has done since the bottom in March 23rd. But the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell from 29,551 on February 12th to 18,591 on March 23rd. Again, a decline of almost 11,000 points in 27 days. I've never seen anything like that, and I would dare to say anybody on this phone call has never seen anything like that as well. It was swift, severe, and basically an extraordinary market event. To give you an idea, a second idea of just how extraordinary that decline was, and indeed what the entire month of March was all about, the volatility in March of this year was basically unprecedented. We've never seen anything like it going back to 1915 in the market, and it was the most volatile month by far. If you added up the daily percentage moves in the Dow Jones Industrial Average in the month of March, in other words, if the on day one in March the market was up 2%, on day two it was down 2%, that would be a total of 4, 2 plus 2. The direction is not important, it's the magnitude of the percentage change. So if you summed up the daily percentage moves in the Dow Jones Industrial Average for the month of March, those percentage totals equaled 117%, or roughly 5.3% per day on average, because there were 22 trading days in the month. So the average daily percent change was 5.3%. The closest month going back to 1915 was in October of 2008, and you all remember what happened in October of 2008, and the average daily percentage change in that month was just 3.8%. And going back to 1915, the average monthly cumulative changes are 15.6%. I'm throwing a lot of numbers out here, but basically in a nutshell, in the month of March, it was 8 times the monthly average volatility percentage change. So you had basically 8 months of trading action squished into 1 month, and that month being March. So again, if it felt like the world was just being torn apart, if it felt like you were seeing something you had never seen before, if it felt like the market was just disintegrating, all of those things were true because we hadn't seen anything like this before. But I think it's important to understand the severity of that, because longtime market people, and I imagine many of you are on this phone call, know that, you know, oftentimes when you see such swift declines, they often are followed by like swift moves, hopefully in the opposite direction. And that is what we have received since the March 23rd lows. And in fact, you know, in that time period, March to April, April to May to June, so in about 3 months' time, we have gone in the Dow Jones Industrial Average from, you know, 18.5 at the bottom up to a close, which the close today was 25,745. So we have made up a fair amount of ground in that 3 months. It was lost in those 27 trading days. Interestingly, a lot of people, and I'm sure you have read this and heard it and probably had friends tell you, there's a tremendous amount of confusion about the market now. In fact, I wrote a piece recently in one of our newsletters that's published by our sister company, Horizon Publishing, which the title was, I Am So Confused. You don't have to go too far to hear about people's confusion. Why is the market doing this? I don't understand why the market rebound is the way it is. Perhaps you have the same confusion. And the confusion centers around the fact that here we have an economy that clearly is struggling. We're in a recession. We're in a fairly deep recession when you start looking at employment numbers and the decline in corporate profits and a number of economic indicators. And so people are saying, you know, I don't understand how the market can have such a strong rally off the bottom when the economy is a mess and probably will continue to be a mess. And to be sure, that is a confusing concept if you buy and believe that the economy and the stock market are the same thing. They are not. And time again, the stock market has told you that. And I'm always amazed when I see that sort of language in newspapers and in the media that kind of correlate what's going on in the economy today to what the stock market should be doing. And that's a mistake, and it's a huge mistake that investors make, and oftentimes it's a crippling mistake because they will make actions in their investment portfolios based on what's going on in the economy, and that's very dangerous. we've written about this. I've talked about it before on audio conferences, but it especially bears repeating given what's been going on in the market. The stock market is forward-looking. In other words, you know, what is going on in the economy today, the stock market reflected that, you know, 3-4 months ago when it fell 11,000 points in 27 trading days. The market was telling you that we were getting into a situation in the economy that was going to be very, very brutal, and that's where we are today. But the market discounted that already and is now looking forward, and at least the rally that the market has had is indicating that it does see light at the end of the tunnel for the economy, typically 6 to 9 months down the road. So, you know, this notion of a stock market can't do well if the economy is lousy has been disproved for virtually every recession and every bear market that's ever occurred. I can go back to 2008, 2009, when the market bottomed in March of 2009 and started to advance pretty readily. The same rhetoric was coming out from market experts as well as individual investors. How in the world can this market go higher when the economy is so bad? Well, again, the market was looking forward, and eventually the economy rebounded, corporate profits rebounded, and the market was reflecting that, discounting that, and was moving higher in anticipation of that. You know, keep in mind, typically what results from recessions and what gets out of recessions and what the market is pointing to are quarterly earnings comparisons improving. And that usually cycles through in about a 9 to 12 month cycle. In other words, you know, the terrible earnings that we're going to see, especially in the second quarter, are setting up easier quarterly comparisons 12 months hence. The first quarter earnings that were duds for some companies are setting up easier quarterly comparisons 12 months hence. That's what the market is looking to and reacting to, that fact that there is going to be improvement ahead. Also keep in mind that what is most important to stocks is not necessarily the absolute level of corporate profits. It's rather the rate of change in trends. So if you have, companies that are coming out with profits that on the surface seem pretty lousy but are better than expectations and better than recent trends, the market will respond favorably to that. You know, we saw a little bit of that in today's trading. You know, for example, a stock like Darden Restaurants, which is the parent company for Olive Garden and some other restaurant chains. I believe they came out today with earnings, and I think their revenues were down 40% plus. And the stock was up pretty sharply. And somebody may go, well, geez, why is that stock? And you see this countless times with a lot of examples. You know, why are the stocks responding higher on what appears to be pretty lousy absolute numbers? Well, it's not the absolute number that matters. It's how did that number meet expectations? And does it show some improvement on a trend from month to month? And that was the case with Darden. And so that's what the market is really looking at right now. So when people kind of say, you know what, I don't understand why the market has come this far this fast. It shouldn't. It's doomed to fail. All of those things, they're really kind of correlating the current economic conditions with the market, and that's a mistake. When I take a step back and look at what has happened in the market, especially off the March lows, it does make some sense to me. One, I would have expected a pretty sharp rebound off the lows given how severe the decline was going into that. So, you know, the markets typically, you know, fast declines are usually followed by pretty fast rebounds. Second, when I look at the major engines of stock market performance, and we've talked about those on these audio conferences before, those major engines for the most part are probably in the bullish camp. If you look at inflation, for example, inflation is one of the three major engines of sustained market moves. Inflation is still very much in the bullish camp. You know, if people wonder why growth stocks, for example, can continue to grow pretty aggressively in terms of their valuations, and we have seen that here recently, one of the things that helps growth stocks is the fact that inflation is pretty much non-existent. Since growth stocks are really valued on future growth, pretty non-existent inflation means you're not eroding the value of that future growth on inflation, so you can have higher earnings multiples on growth stocks. Now, there's been a lot written that says, listen, the Feds are shoveling $4-6 trillion of stimulus fiscal policy into the market, into the economy, that can't help but show up as inflationary at some point. And that may be the case, but it ain't the case now, and it's not going to be the case in the near future. And so I think you have to put inflation in the bullish side of the ledger for stocks. Another engine is interest rates. And interest rates are important because they price the attractiveness of alternatives to stocks. And another benefit, obviously, is lower interest rates mean lower debt service. So in an environment of low interest rates, very low interest rates, very, very, very low interest rates like we have today, I mean, the interest rate on a 10-year Treasury note now is about 0.69%, and on a 30-year Treasury, it's 1.44%. Given that the expected return of a bond is its coupon rate or interest rate, anybody who buys a 30-year Treasury note today, the expected annual return is the yield, which is 1.44%. So, in effect, congratulations, you're buying an investment that is going to pay you about 1.44% per year for the next 30 years, which is probably not even going to keep up with inflation. So, when you have an environment where interest rates are very, very low, alternatives to stocks aren't very attractive, and that's bullish, and you have to put interest rates in the bullish side of the ledger. Finally, the third major engine for stock market performance is earnings. And that's where things get a little tricky. Earnings aren't going to be very good in the second quarter on an absolute basis. And they're probably not going to be very good in the second half of the year on an absolute basis relative to where they were in 2019. But on the other hand, I think the market is already discounting that to some extent. So I don't think you can put earnings in the bullish side of the ledger, but I'd be very cautious about putting earnings in the bearish side of the ledger. It feels more to me to be kind of neutral right now, and we'll have a better read on that, obviously, over the next few quarters. So I don't necessarily think corporate profits will be detrimental to stock market performance, but I'm not sure just how helpful they will be either. Perhaps if we get a V-shaped economic recovery in the second half of the year, that will juice corporate profits and they'll be stronger than people think. That's possible. I think a lot of bearing on that will be kind of COVID-19 related in terms of how that impacts states opening, or if states or certain states or locales are forced to close again. That is something that the stock market has not been discounting, I don't believe. So, you know, the economic activity in the second half of this year, I think, will have a lot of bearing based on what happens with the COVID-19. Is there a vaccine, for example? Is there herd immunity that kind of squelches some of the acceleration in cases that we've been seeing here in the last couple of weeks? I kind of think that's what's going to happen, quite frankly, which means I am reasonably upbeat about the market and even the economy in the second half of this year. But if, in fact, we get into serious pandemic issues, that is, you know, all bets are off the table at that point. I know another event in the second half of the year that a lot of folks are pointing to as having an impact on the market is the November election. That is going to be tough to handicap, and quite frankly, history shows that trying to handicap that and placing major bets on what political party you think will be in power typically is not a good way to manage an investment portfolio. Now, there seem to be very clear delineations between the parties and their platforms this year in particular, although I can point to previous years when that was the case and the market didn't seem to care. The biggest issue I have with elections, and where I think they can have the biggest impact is on tax policy. And to me, it's simple math. If you raise taxes, you reduce after-tax returns on investments and assets have to adjust to take that into account. So tax policy, I think, is very important. But again, I would caution folks to not get too aggressive in terms of changing portfolio strategies based on perceptions of who will win the election. And even after the election, quite honestly, history has shown that the markets can perform well or not so well, regardless of what party is in power and what party is in the Oval Office. I think, again, the biggest issue in the second half of the year from an economic standpoint will be what is happening in the pandemic, how are states and locales reacting to that, and how is that impacting the economy. But again, when I look at what I think is going to happen in the second half of the year, I come back to those major engines, which I think are net bullish. And I also look at investment sentiment, because I think that matters. And the nice tool that I like to look at for investment sentiment is one that we publish in the newsletters periodically, called the Intermediate Potential Risk Indicator. That indicator looks at the percentage of stocks on the New York Stock Exchange which trade above their 200-day moving average. Basically, the lower the percentage, the more out of favor stocks are and the more likelihood that they are to bounce. The higher the percentage, the more stocks are highly valued and thus more likely to decline. Going back to March, when the market was just falling apart, the percentage of stocks on the New York Stock Exchange fell to just 2%. In other words, only 2% of the stocks on the New York Stock Exchange were trading above their 200-day moving average. The only other time that indicator had gotten that low was in 2008-2009. So it turned out to be a very, very good time to be buying stocks, because you were buying pretty close to the bottom. Typically, significant market tops form when that percentage is in the 70s, 80s, at real outlier positions. Even with the rebound off the March lows, the percentage today going into today was just 23%. So it's not 2%, but it's not 70 or 80%. It's 23%, which is still very low on a historical basis. So when you look at that sentiment indicator, it is not coinciding with the sort of things that you see at significant market tops or prior to significant market declines. The other sentiment factor that I think is important is, what are people doing with their money right now? And right now, there is a record level amount of cash in money market accounts, about $4.6 trillion in money market accounts. It's the highest level ever since these numbers have been recorded, going back to 1992. So there is a lot of cash on the sidelines that can come into the market. And I think that high level of cash reflects a certain uncertainty or cautiousness on the part of investors, and that, contrarily, is bullish, because, as you know, markets climb a wall of worry, and there's still tremendous amounts of worry and concern. So when I look at investment sentiment, that is still clearly in the bullish camp as well. So I think there are a lot of reasons to be reasonably optimistic about stock performance in the second half of the year. Now, does that mean what we're going to see in the second half of the year is going to, you know, rhyme with what we've seen since the March 23rd lows? My guess is that's not going to be the case. You know, again, we've had a significant bounce. I think the bias is to the upside. I think the market can churn out more gains in the second half of the year, but I think the results will be a little bit more subdued than what we've seen in the last 3 months, potentially a lot more subdued. I think the returns in equities will outpace those in fixed income. So I continue to like stocks versus bonds and fixed income investments. I think the big reason, and maybe one of the few reasons to own bonds, is really to dampen the volatility of your portfolio, because nobody's going to get rich off of bonds these days, and the returns, I think, are going to be very muted. So I do like stocks better than bonds, and I do think the trend in the second half we'll have an upward bias, but I don't think it will be as vigorous to the upside as we've seen in the last 3 months of the year. Finally, from a Dow theory perspective, there are some real clear points that have been established to help us discern and help us reveal the market telling its own story. Right now, the Dow theory, which looks at the movement of the Dow Jones Industrial and the Dow Jones Transportation averages, is bullish. The primary trend is bullish, and it's bullish because we've had a series of new highs in both the Dow Industrials and the Dow Transports coming off that March 23rd low. However, we have some points that have been recently established on the downside in both of those averages, in that if we see closes below those points, the Dow theory would turn bearish. And again, I think the big wild card from a market perspective that's out there that the market hasn't discounted at this point would be if, in fact, we get into a series of significant shutdowns or lockdowns based on an acceleration in the COVID-19 or a reacceleration. I don't think the market has fully discounted that. But if, in fact, we see closes in the indices below the points that I'm about to give you, that would be an indication that perhaps there are going to be more problems associated with COVID-19 and the economy in the second half of the year. So we're kind of at a little bit of a crossroads in the market from a Dow theory perspective, and let me give you those levels right now. In the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the important low point that hopefully the market continues to stay above is the June 11th low of 25,128. So 25,128. That's the June 11th low. If in fact the Dow Industrials would close below that level, and today the Industrials closed at 25,745. So, you know, a good 600 points above that level, 620 points, although as we've seen, the market can move in 620 points in an afternoon. So, you know, we're still reasonably comfortably above that, but in volatile markets, we're certainly not out of the woods. So again, that June 11th low in the Dow Industrials is 25,128. In the transports, the Dow Jones Transportation Average, the low is 88,396. The close today in the Dow Transports was 89.99. Actually, it was 9,000. So we're about 160 points above that right now in the transports. Again, something that could be made up on the downside pretty quickly, but also a little bit of a cushion there. So again, those points on the industrials and transports, they're the June 11th lows. In the case of the industrials, 25,128. And in the transports, 9,000. And again, you would need both of those indices to close below those levels for the Dow theory to turn from bullish to bearish. And if that would occur, I think that would be kind of a bad omen potentially for the second half of this year from the standpoint that perhaps the COVID-19 issues will be lingering, the economic rebound will be stalled, and I think that would be factored in with stocks. For those of you who follow the S&P 500, an important low there is, again, that June 11th low in the S&P 500, which is 3,002, 3,002. The S&P closed today at 3,083. So there's a bit of a cushion there for the S&P 500. So those are those points in the market. You know, to summarize, the major engines, I think, still point to a higher market. Investment sentiment still points to a higher market in the second half of the year. I think the market's action is foreshadowing an economic recovery that might be swifter and better than people expect in the second half of the year. But again, the one looming problem, potential problem out there, I believe, is the COVID-19 and what that can do if, in fact, that starts to accelerate. And I think the market will tell that story if, in fact, we get significant closes below those points that I just gave you. So that's kind of the big picture economy and stock market. Let's drill down a bit more to a granular level and talk a little bit about stocks and sectors for the second half of the year. I think one of the concepts that comes up a lot in picking stocks right now is this whole growth versus value argument. And historically, value, you know, and historically meaning going back to, 1930, historically, value stocks have outperformed growth stocks over time. That has not been the case really in the last 5 to 10 years. When you look at, as a group, growth stocks versus value stocks, growth stocks have really outperformed value stocks. And there have been a lot of reasons that have been given for that outperformance. One that really hasn't been talked about a lot, but I think is one of the biggest reasons why and why growth may continue to have an edge going forward, is the fact that one of the big secular changes in the stock market in the last 10 years has been this movement toward passive investing or index investing. You have seen huge dollar volumes going into various investments, funds, exchange-traded funds that allow investors to buy an index or to buy a market, whether that's the S&P 500 or the Russell 2000 or an international index. The fact that you have trillions of dollars being funneled into index funds is significant when you start talking about this argument between growth versus value, because quite frankly, index investing and passive investing is a growth investment bet. The way indices are calculated and built based on market caps, it really plays into the strength of growth stocks, and it kind of perpetuates this virtuous circle, so to speak, of growth stocks getting bigger, more money coming in through indexing, going into those stocks, getting bigger, and so forth and so forth. So I think any investor out there that thinks, now is the time for value stocks to do better, and to do better, and importantly, for an extended period of time, I think you have to kind of ignore a little bit the fact that passive investing continues to be very strong. I think there are now more dollars on index and passive investing than there are active management. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't have periodic sessions where value beats growth, and even quarters, and even a couple of quarters. And we've seen that, some periodic outperformance of value over the last 5 and 10 years. But again, I'm coming more and more around to the idea that if you believe passive investing and index investing is going to continue, that is going to be something that really makes growth stocks more attractive on a relative basis. So I say that not so investors go out and load up on growth stocks, but to maybe guard against investors really trying aggressively to play value stocks. And there's been a lot written about that, how value stocks are as cheap as they've ever been. And when you look at history, that's probably true. But I would caution investors that the best way to construct a portfolio, quite frankly, is to have both value stocks and growth stocks in a portfolio. And if you need to tilt those weightings, I would still probably tilt toward growth versus value. And a good way to be able to do that is in investing in exchange-traded funds, which mimic certain indices. And I'm in terms of exchange-traded funds right now, if in fact investors are looking to do some passive investing and to allocate money to certain indices, let me give you 4 ETFs that we like, that we think do a good job of covering a particular investment space and a particular index. The other thing that's nice about index investing, and I'm not suggesting an investor should have 100% of their money in indexes. However, when, especially in market environments where you're trying to play a rebound, so to speak, you want to make sure that you capture, that you're going to capture at least part of that rebound by owning the market. In other words, the worst thing you could do is go out and buy 10 stocks and the market just takes off and never looks back, but you bought the wrong 10 stocks. So to have in a portfolio some exposure to indexes via ETFs, I think makes sense. And we do that in our forecast total market strategy that I'll talk about in a few moments. We incorporate some index ETFs in there to make sure that we have captured the return of those particular markets, and then we sprinkle in individual stocks to give us the ability, hopefully, to outperform with those individual stocks. But here are four ETF names that we like. They're all Vanguard ETFs. Vanguard does a very good job with its funds. They tend to have good performance, and they tend to have very, very competitive expenses or fees. So, you know, again, if you're looking to do some passive investing to capture a rebound, one ETF that we like is the Vanguard S&P 500, which is a simple index on the S&P 500. That symbol is V as in Victor, O-O. The Vanguard Small Cap Growth gives you exposure to small cap stocks. Again, I'm not suggesting that your portfolio should have 50% of it in small cap stocks, but to have some allocation in a broadly diversified portfolio to small caps makes sense. And this particular ETF with a single investment will give you exposure across a lot of small cap growth stocks. The symbol for the Vanguard Small Cap Growth is V as in Victor, B as in boy, K, VBK. If you want to target growth stocks, particularly large cap growth stocks, Vanguard has a very good ETF called the Vanguard Growth ETF. The symbol is VUG. V as in Victor, UG. And then finally, it has not been a winning strategy to have a lot of exposure to international stocks over the last 5 to 10 years. We are starting to see a little bit better performance from that sector. To have some exposure in foreign makes sense from a diversification standpoint. I would not get crazy or overboard in that space. But we do in our total market strategy, because we are trying to cover the entire market, have exposure in the international area. And if you want that, a nice ETF that will do that, again, is the Vanguard FTSE Development ETF. FTSE being FTSC, it's a foreign index. So it's the Vanguard FTSE Development Country ETF. The symbol is V as in Victor, EA. So those are four ETFs that I think are well situated for the second half of this year for investors that want to put a portion of their funds in an index to capture the market return for that particular sector. And again, those are the Vanguard S&P 500, VOO, the Vanguard Small Cap Growth, VBK, the Vanguard FTSE Development, VEA, and the Vanguard Growth, VUG. Another sector that I want to talk about, because I know it's very popular with a lot of our readers of our newsletters, published by Horizon Publishing, is the utility sector. The utility sector has been an interesting sector in that historically, it has been one where you could be a bit defensive in utilities, where they didn't have a lot of the volatility and didn't feel a lot of the volatility when the market has been crazy. That hasn't necessarily been the case in 2020. In fact, utilities have, in some days and in some weeks, have been as volatile as tech stocks, quite frankly. And today was a good example of that. You had a very, very strong day in the market, except for utility stocks, which had a very weak day. So it has been a bit of a perplexing area for investors. And it's kind of, quite frankly, reverted a little bit back to how utilities used to behave for people before they became really go-go growth stocks and produced kind of growth stock returns over the last 10 years. Indeed, you know, people who have owned utility stocks for the last 10 years saw some really strong appreciation along with their dividend yields. Utility stocks historically, you know, people buy them for their dividend yields, but they were getting growth stock performance as well. And what that did was pushed utility valuations to pretty excessive levels going into 2020. So it's not surprising when you put it in that framework that utility stocks have kind of suffered a bit this year, along with a lot of stocks, and in some cases have suffered more. Now, I think that correction that we have seen in utility stocks has restored some of the value attractiveness in the group. They're still a little bit pricey, but I think that they are starting to get repriced a little bit better for new buying. So investors that are looking at utility stocks, I'm going to give you two names now of two of our favorite utilities that I think in the second half of this year will perform considerably better than they have in the first half of the year. Those two utilities, the first is Next Era Energy. The symbol is NEE. It's Florida-based utility. What I like about Next Era Energy, I like a lot of things, actually. I like the growth potential of the company's service region down in the southeast. I also like the fact that Next Era Energy is the largest provider of wind and solar power in the United States. So here you have a utility that can also be of interest to a lot of different sorts of investor constituencies. One of those constituencies being the growing population of investors that invest in ESG or SRI investing, the environmental, social, and governance investing. Traditional utilities aren't really in favor in those constituencies. Something like Next Era Energy with its solar and wind power does draw appeal from that particular constituency. So there's a broader investment group and a broader swath of investors that are willing to invest in a company like Next Era Energy if they want utility exposure. So I like that. I also like the dividend growth potential of Next Era Energy, which I think the dividend growth is going to be well above trend line for utilities. Stock trades for about $238 per share. That's down from a 52-week high of $283 per share. So you're looking at a stock that's trading at about $45 off its 52-week high. So I think there's still plenty of upside there. Again, a dividend yield of 2.3%, which is on the low side for utilities, but reflects what I think is above-average dividend growth. And also, too, keep in mind that's a 2.3% yield that's still about 50% higher than you're going to get on a 30-year Treasury note. So if you're comparing yields to bonds and Treasury securities, it's not a bad dividend yield. So that's Next Era Energy, stock symbol NEE. The second utility that I want to mention is Dominion Energy. Stock symbol is D. D as in David. Dominion Energy. Stock trades for about $81 per share. The high is $91 per share, the 52-week high. So you're trading at about 10 bucks off its 52-week high. Dividend yield is very attractive at 4.6%. Dominion provides utility services in the Virginia, primarily in the Virginia area. Again, an area that I think you'll see decent growth. I like the dividend yield. I'm comfortable with the stock, and I think it's one of the higher quality utilities in the marketplace. So those are two utility names that if somebody who likes utility stocks and now feels that it's time to get in them given the weakness that they've had for the first half of the year, I think these are two that will perform fairly well, certainly outperform the sector in the second half of 2020. Another theme that's been popular with investors has been this whole notion of investing in kind of COVID-19 stocks, companies that are taking advantage of the stay-at-home or work-at-home themes and putting money into those themes. I will caution investors to tread a little slowly in those themes because some of the stocks have just gotten crazily valued. And that's not to mean that they can't continue to pick up buyers in the short run, but you're buying some very, very expensive merchandise. I would throw in their stocks such as Peloton, the exercise company, Zoom, which is the video conferencing. You're looking at some of the companies that benefit, that, you know, those are two that come to mind, but there's some other ones out there. You know, some of the vaccine-related companies like a Moderna and some of these very small biotechs that are supposedly, you know, on the cusp of doing vaccine work. Just be very careful chasing those stocks right now. There's a lot of hope, a lot of goodwill, a lot of optimism that's already built into them. And especially as you start chasing some of the vaccine stocks, there are, I don't know what last count, 20, 30 companies working on a vaccine, including some of the real big boys in that space. So you know, to try to pick a winner, and if you're focusing on small companies in there, you know, there's danger to that. So be very cautious about trading and chasing kind of coronavirus-type stocks. If you do want to kind of go with those various kind of coronavirus at home, working from home, staying at home, lockdown plays, you know, let me give you a couple of names that should benefit from that. One is a stock that has had a very strong move, but I think there's, you know, there's there. It's a very high quality company. That company is Adobe, A-D-B-E is the symbol. A-D as in David, B as in boy, E, Adobe. And Adobe has a suite of products that are used for computer graphics and creating presentations and, you know, doing a lot of the things that you do if you're working remotely, if you're working from home. And I think that is probably a trend that will continue even after the COVID-19 has died down. I think a lot of companies have learned that they can continue to operate at a fairly high level without all the office space and without necessarily all the employees having to work on site. And there's cost benefits to that to companies, et cetera. So some of those sorts of companies like Adobe, I think, do have legs in this environment. And Adobe, you know, is a company with real profits, real growth. It's just a high quality company that we like quite a bit. Another stock that should benefit is Akamai Technologies, A-K-A-M, M as in Mary, A-K-A-M. Akamai trades for $102 a share. It has been a good performer, but I think there's pretty good upside still remaining in this stock. Akamai helps companies optimize the delivery of digital data via the internet. So as you see more and more stuff being pushed through the internet, and you see more and more people using the internet, and you see demand growing for bandwidth, Akamai is really in the catbird seat there to help companies optimize the delivery of that data. You know, a perfect example is just the growth in streaming services and the use of those streaming services for people to view content while at home via the internet. You know, they need to optimize the delivery of that, and you're seeing just huge amounts of that occurring. Akamai is very well situated to take advantage of those trends. Again, that's AKAM. So those are a couple of names if you want to play this whole notion of you know, kind of classic coronavirus-related stocks. I think those are stocks that have potential, you know, even if the at-home themes fade away. These are just really high quality stocks. Neither is cheap, but I'm willing to pay up for that type of quality in those sorts of companies. Some other names I want to give you of and in fact three other names that I'd like to give you that I think are offering some interesting potential for the second half of 2020. The first is Bristol Myers Squibb. Symbol is B as in boy, M as in Mary Y, BMY. The stock trades for $58. Bristol Myers Squibb is a huge pharmaceutical company. They got huger with the acquisition of Celgene, which was a biotechnology company. The company is going to demonstrate very good earnings and revenue growth this year and next. That's something that you don't see in a lot of companies. They boosted their dividend, I think, 8% earlier this year. Again, an 8% dividend increase is something you're not going to see from a lot of companies. I mean, in 2020 has been we've seen more dividend suspensions and cuts than we've seen in the last 10 years. So, you know, dividend growth is not going to be easy to come by. Bristol Myers is providing that. Dividend yield is over 3% for the stock, so you get quite the dividend yield. And I think you get good appreciation potential. Why I mention the stock now is it's in a bit of a lull, quite frankly. The stock has had a little bit of a, I don't want to say disappointing, but a kind of a breather here over the last 3 or 4 months where it's come off its high of around $69 a share. So at $58, I think it's offering a very good opportunity for a stock that should show very nice total return potential in the second half of this year. So that's Bristol Myers. symbol BMY, stock trades for $58 a share. The second stock I want to mention is United Health, the insurer. Stock trades for $295 a share. Yield is 1.7%. This is just a quality blue chip company, and I like it in the second half of the year because you may get a decent buying opportunity in the second half of the year to pick these shares up. That's because UNH, United Health, tends to have some volatility around elections because of the political rhetoric that typically surrounds healthcare in this country. I think United Healthcare will come out a winner in virtually any scenario, quite honestly. But it will probably have some volatility as well. So I like the stock at $295, to tell you the truth, but I think you might be able to get an interesting buying opportunity even below $295 sometime over the second half of the year. So just be aware of that. The last stock that I'll mention is one that I especially like because I think it's one of the technology stocks that still offers interesting value. A lot of technology has really done extremely well, and to pick through that, it's really hard to find a stock that you feel reasonably comfortable with from a valuation standpoint. One of them is Applied Materials. The symbol is AMAT. AM as in Mary, AT as in Tom, AMAT. Stock trades are about $60 a share. It's down from its 52-week high of about 69 to 70. It is a leading provider of semiconductor manufacturing equipment. I like the semi sector. I think that companies are going to continue to have to remain on the cutting edge of technology, which means, you know, and semiconductors are being put in virtually every aspect of our lives and every device that we come in contact with. So there's going to continue to be a huge long-term demand for semiconductors, and I think Applied Materials is a nice play in that space for helping semiconductor firms manufacture those semiconductors. It's a very cutting-edge company, and I think it's $60, down about $10 from its 52-week high. Yield is 1.5%, so you get a decent yield there. It's not great, but you get paid some cash flow to wait for the stock to rebound as well. So that's a stock that I like quite a bit. Finally, I want to talk a little bit about Horizon Investment Services and how we bring together all of these various things that I was talking about, this notion of passive versus active investing, ETFs versus individual stocks. We pull all of that together in a single investment portfolio that we manage for individuals, and it's called our Horizon Forecast Total Market Strategy. And as the name implies, it's a portfolio of both individual stocks as well as ETFs that allow us to both track the market, get market exposure in certain areas via the ETFs, and then hopefully juice the portfolio's return, building around those ETFs a portfolio of individual stocks. This is a fairly new strategy for Horizon. We've been managing it now for about 6 months. We've been very pleased with the numbers, and it's something that I think is a nice portfolio for the time. And because, again, you get individual stock exposure, but you're going to get that market exposure through those ETFs that I think is very important, especially when you're trying to capture markets that are moving higher. Horizon Investment Services is our registered investment advisory where we work with individuals to provide hands-on money management for those individuals that are looking for help on their portfolios. Horizon currently manages about $200 million in assets, and you know, we would love to work with any of you that have an interest in Horizon. Our clients' assets are custodied at Charles Schwab and TD Ameritrade. The structure is very easy. It's a very transparent process to work with Horizon. We manage the account for you, but it is your account. You can view the account online. You'll get regular statements from the broker where your account is housed. You'll get the confirms. So it's all a very transparent process. We merely provide the back-end money management for that program for you. And again, we have a host of strategies and portfolios that Horizon offers, and one of them is this total market strategy where you actually own the individual stocks and ETFs, and Horizon does the managing of the portfolio for you. If anybody would like information about Horizon and our new, fairly new total market strategy, or any of the other strategies we offer, that toll-free number is 800-711-7969. That's 800-711-7969. And finally, I want to get to some questions here that I've gotten. And again, I appreciate all of you listening and staying with us here. And I've got a couple of questions here, and let me kind of get to those, and I will read the questions for you. First question from a listener is, has the market actually stopped responding to bad news? Yeah, that's a great question. On the surface, that's one of those questions where people kind of go, that's a goofy question. But actually, a sign of a market bottom, quite frankly, is when stocks stop going down on bad news. That's when you can tell that the market has discounted to a large extent the negative news. And it actually is a fairly simple way to help you start to peg markets that are in a bottoming process. If you go back to that February to March period, you know, every bit of bad news that was coming out, the market was just going down and getting pounded. Every bit of bad news, you know, this state's closed down, that state closed down, this company's earnings are going to be bad, and this market was just getting drilled and drilled and drilled. But then, as we started to see come late March, you know, the bad news didn't stop, but the market stopped going down and, in fact, started to kind of go up on bad news. So I think this market has risen now to a point that it probably is a little bit more vulnerable to bad news. I think it is very vulnerable to bad news on the COVID front. I think it's less vulnerable to bad news if a company comes out and reports what appears to be bad earnings on an absolute basis, because again, I think the market is looking forward and looking past that. But I think if you know, we come out with significant news about, you know, several states are shutting down again, I think that is the sort of bad news that the market will not react to. Now, interestingly, I will say today that in the face of Texas coming out and saying that they were slowing their reopening in certain big city areas, the market took a dip and then came right back. So it was nice to see the market do that. I'm not as optimistic that the market would do that if we start seeing wholesale closures. Maybe, you know, the Texas was a pause in a reopening and not necessarily shutting down again. If we start to see massive lockdowns again, I think that's going to be a problem for the market. The next question is, I'm wondering what your approach is to trade tensions that exist between the U.S. and China. I'll be honest with you, that is not something that we put into our calculus for trading and for building portfolios. Our feeling is that one of the great strengths of the Dow theory in the market is that it captures all sorts of stuff in the market, and including trade tensions between the U.S. and China. And so, you know, our feeling is rather than try to anticipate or pick what's going to happen or predict what's going to happen between the U.S. and China, you know, our feeling is that, you know, let the market tell its story, and the market will tell its story through the prism of the Dow theory. So, you know, we're not necessarily making any bets or really changing things per se based on some perception between the U.S. and China. You know, that, what we have seen up to this point is that any tensions in the marketplace between those two have resulted in more kind of sector changes as opposed to broad market shifts. So, you know, we're not necessarily, you know, taking a lot of that trade tension into the calculus for our portfolios at this time. The last question that I'm going to address here is, it says, regarding your 90% plus investment in stocks, do you recommend a rapid rebalance or a more gradual rebalance over, say, a 3 to 6 month period? So to put some color on that, Right now, in portfolios that we manage where we have the ability to be fully invested or near fully invested, we are in the 90-92% range. So we have a very healthy exposure to stocks, and we have had that for several months, and it has paid off nicely with this market rebounding. If you're somebody that is, say, 50% stocks right now, and you're wondering, how do I get to that 90%? History and research says that the biggest factor you have from a success standpoint on a portfolio is harnessing the power of time. Time is a very valuable asset on investing, and you maximize the power of time by having money in stocks as quickly as possible, which means you should put that money in a rapid way. Having said that, I also know that that's a very difficult thing to ask people to do, especially given the current market environment where people may know they should put money into the market, but they're finding it very difficult. Perhaps, for example, they got out of the market in March right at the bottom and they've missed the rally, and now they're sitting there like, you know, wondering what to do, and they don't want to put money in now because they don't want to look dumb putting it in at what might be the top, et cetera. So I understand, you know, for me to tell you, hey, you should put all the money into the market right now, you're probably not going to do that, and I understand why. So you need to find some palatable way to do it, and typically a palatable way would be to designate some time period, say like 3 to 6 months, to start to feed money into the market. And if you get a more substantial decline in the market, to take advantage of that. Now, I will say we are at a little bit of a crossroads for the market given our proximity to some very important points on the downside. So, you know, that may speak to being a little bit more gingerly in terms of how aggressively you put money into the market, just to see how the market, if the market can kind of hold above those lows that I mentioned earlier in the discussion. But I think that to set some time period, say 3 to 6 months, and to start some process of putting even small amounts of money into the market with the idea that, you know, barring a decline below those low points, getting up to that 90%, that's kind of how I would do it. So I would try to do it over some short period of time, say 3 to 6 months. The other last point I will make is that, you know, 90% plus investment in stocks, you know, that's based on kind of a generalization on somebody who, for that particular pool of money, wants to be, you know, close to 100% invested in stocks. There are a lot of people listening to this that are, you know, probably because of their risk profile, ages, et cetera. I'm not suggesting that you should be at 90% invested in stocks. What I'm suggesting is that whatever your equity allocation typically is, you should be at least 90% to that equity allocation. So let's say, for example, you're an investor that likes an allocation in their portfolio of 50% stocks, 50% bonds. So you like a completely balanced 50-50. Based on our 90% plus exposure to stocks, you would apply that 90% or so to your equity allocation of 50% to come up with, you know, you should be, if you're a 50-50 guy with 50% equity being your max equity position, we're suggesting you should be close to 45% right now, because we think stocks are an attractive alternative. So again, not everyone should go out and put 90% plus their money in stocks. But for the appropriate equity allocation in your portfolio that you like, you know, you ought to be at least 90% of that equity allocation right now. Well, again, I want to take the time to thank everyone for spending the last hour with me on this. We appreciate on the publishing side your readership to our newsletters, and again on the investment side, our Horizon Investment Services money management firm, we'd love to work with you. And that number, again, if you're interested in getting more information about Horizon Investment, is 800-711-5000. 7969. And with that, thank you and good luck with your investments.